The average reply rate across the industry is 0 to 3%. So that's all the shot you're giving it. And you're telling me you're going to automate it. If I'm a top rep or I want to be a top rep, that tells me one, I need to follow up, and two, I need to write my own email. It's very easy to stand apart from the crowd. In a world full of automation, it is very, very easy for you to be highlighted as being a human.
That's Mike Wonder, a account executive at Lavender, and he runs the 3-minute sales school. He says he's just a mediocre sales guy and an average email writer, but his numbers are anything but average. In his first 90 days at Lavender, Mike was able to book 87 out of 103 accounts just from cold emails. His email open rate is 65.3%. His reply rate is 45.8%. So he sent 406 emails and he got 186 replies. In this episode, we are going to learn all about how Mike writes his emails. What Mike does before writing emails, his mindset of writing emails, and his cold email frameworks. So Mike, can you tell us, how did you book 87 accounts out of 103 in your first 90 days?
Yeah, I think it's always good to start off with like, where do I work? And like, just to overemphasize that there's not much of a brand, right? Lavender is just now a 22 person company. And at the start of this month, on August 1st, we'll be 24 people. And because I feel like a lot of people will see like, a reply rate, or they see the amount of meetings that you're booked and things like that, and they immediately go to like, well, you had a good brand or all these other things. Not everybody knows who Lavender is. We have a pretty decent presence online, but believe it or not everybody is online, right? So there's that stuff. But essentially what I would say went into it is all the preparation and work that not a lot of sellers today are willing to do. And when you look at it, right, like my job is not to be an SDR or a BDR. I'm a full cycle AE. And so I wasn't just going out there and booking, you know, all those meetings. I was also working accounts, having to take meetings all day and things like that. And so it did take extra time for me to sit back and look at what went into these accounts, the problems they might have been solving. But at the end of the day, that's what you have to do if you want to get a meeting booked with them, right? If you want to get a meeting booked with those accounts that you have, right? I think it's 87 out of 103, some odd number like that, right? I mean, what really went into it was I dove into their company. I knew what they did, who they sold to, the problems they might have had, and I created a point of view. And I think that's the crucial part that a lot of sellers forget about.
On this list, so how did you segment your list actually? Did you go after like the SaaS industry, or what was your process?
Yeah, I did a couple of different things. I talk about list building quite a bit because I think it's the most important thing that you can do. But essentially, everybody says, look at their customers and build a list based on them. And everyone's like, sounds good. What does that mean? Right. And so it's like, okay, I looked at my customer base and I said, who's having the most success with Lavender? But I didn't care about what, you know, outside of their success metrics, like how much of their reply rate go up and things like that. What I cared about was what makes up that company. Who was the first meeting with? So when I go back into Salesforce and I look at the opportunity and where it was created, what title was that first meeting with? Was it with a sales director or a VP of sales or an ops person, right? And I wrote down all the different titles that I was getting first meetings with for my company was prior to me being there. And then from that point, once I had a title breakdown, I started to look more and more at the companies. And I figured out, okay, what industry were they in? 50% of them were in SaaS, right? The other 50% were in non-technology companies who, more or less, are really just operating off of Outlook or Gmail, right? Reps don't even know their reply rate or their open rate. So a whole set of different things that I can talk about compared to a tech company who's probably got a full tech stack. And so once I did that, I was segmented by, okay, are they Series A, B, C, D companies, right? Do they have VC funding, or are they PE, or are they public, right? Things like that. And from there, I was able to figure out a VC company operates very differently than a PE company does, right? VC-backed companies are focused on growth. They're focused on continuously just adding as fast as they can, right? Efficiency metrics. A PE company is focused on quality, doing more with less. I know it's a buzzword, but really, you don't have as many people. Take a good look at like Coupa. Coupa just got acquired by Thoma Bravo. The first thing they did was slice the entire org. It's not because those people didn't know how to do their jobs, but it's because as a PE firm, you have to be profitable. And so the number one thing on their mind is, how can I be profitable? And so with that, if you can't make a case about how you're going to return a quick profit, right, back on to your, you know, to the investment they're going to make in your technology, they're just not going to buy you. And so that's kind of how I was segmenting my different lists. And then from there, I went through and I was able to formulate some of that stuff for the point of view.
So I really like that, because that's the same approach I'm taking, because you don't want to, because I think when you join, maybe you had you could go after any accounts on the market. And obviously here you just go backward on your list. So you start with the buyer persona and then the criteria from your customer. So, and I think it's something in outbound that you need to do that, because if not, outbound is going to be really, really hard because you are not contacting the right people. So what other criteria you are looking for? So you mentioned, for example, if they have a Series A or Series B, but did you look at other criteria, tech stack, for example, or other things?
Yeah, so once I'm actually emailing that person, right, from that company, is when I take a good look at their tech stack. Like if I know their tech stack, most people, actually, you'd be surprised. A lot of sales reps don't realize, or they do realize it, they don't take the time to look at it. If you have a tool like Clearbit or a ZoomInfo or an Apollo or a Seamless, right, any sort of data provider, they also have data on the company's tech stacks, right? And while it might not be the most accurate, you can verify. Why not add a below the line person, like an AE or an SDR in my case, and ask them, hey, how are you liking Sales Loft, right? Like we're currently using X and might be switching to that. They have no idea, right? Try to get a little bit of information just to verify that they're using some of the tech that they are, or it says they're using. And then from there, you can formulate, what are the differences, right? And for Lavender, it's a little bit of a different scenario. And this is why I liked it, because it's not like I'm trying to replace a Sales Loft or an Outreach or anything like that, right? We sit on top of it and help you make the most out of it. And so I think what you have to understand when you're trying to reach out to different companies too is, like, your job is to put yourself as much as you can in your prospect's mindset. So when you're reaching out to, you know, whoever your ICP is, I don't want to just keep talking about who mine is, but to help the audience more, whoever your ICP is, right? The first thing you need to ask yourself is, am I approaching this with a lens of what I'm going to get and what I need, or what they need out of it in their current state? You have to think about the prospect the entire time. If you are at all writing about what you need and what you want out of this, you're already setting yourself behind. Think about their current state. They've been just fine with what they have. Why do they need you? What is the difference? What are you going to do to actually help them? Because the fact that they're on your list, one of the big things that we'll talk about, right, if we talk about mindset, if you ask me, is you have to remember they are on your list, but you are not on theirs.
So, and just to finish on list building also, that's, like we said, it's super important. On my side right now, I was doing this last week, actually, going after the current customers we have and then to see if there is like any patterns inside the companies. So on my side, well, obviously, it was like few industries, but also some specific titles, for example, because I'm not selling to salespeople, so I'm selling to their leaders. And there is new titles, for example, that one vendor on the market like kind of invented. So they don't have like SDRs or AEs, but they have like this kind of structure. They are really more specialized from specific roles. So when you know that they use those titles, for example, inside the company, I know that they will be more interested to what I'm selling. So I think that's something also super helpful. So to follow up on, because right now we are talking about before you start writing your emails, so we are talking about buyer persona and list building. So you mentioned the point of view. So how do you create your point of view before reaching out to a company?
Yeah, for sure. So you create a point of view as you're writing the email, but you can't do that without doing your research. So there's a couple of steps that you need to take. And the first and the most important thing, all right, is I always tell people this. It's my rule of thumb. If you don't know 90% of the companies that are on your list on what they do, who they sell to, and why you're reaching out to them, your list is too long or you didn't do any research. And if you fall into that bucket, go back to start. Do not go to finish, right? Do not click send on an email. Do not even write the email because you're already putting yourself behind. I work with a tremendous woman called Jen Allen. She is an absolute rock star. And one of her things that she talks about all the time is one of her sales leaders, her favorite sales leader she's ever worked with, would always come into a pipeline review call. And when somebody was really excited about a deal, she would stop them and say, hey, what do they do? Who do they sell to? What can we do to help them? And tell me a little bit about that. And if you can't answer those questions, you didn't have a deal. I think it's the same thing, but I think you've gone too far at that point. Like, if you can't answer those questions, you shouldn't even be reaching out to them, right? And so in this time and age where everybody is trying to speed up and look at efficiencies and maximizing things with AI and trying to send as many personalized emails as they can, right? That has ripple effects that a lot of sellers completely neglect and don't think about, right? But one of the biggest ripple effects is you're setting an example before you ever get into their inbox that you only care about your time, not their time, right? And so that's not kind of how you want to start that relationship. And that all rolls up into your POV. When you're creating a POV, you're showcasing that you did your research. You know what they do. You're talking about them, right? And so when you're actually creating that, it's basically a formula. A point of view is essentially your why. And your why equals context plus observation slash insight. And so what we mean by that is when you're looking at a point of view and creating a point of view for a company, you might say something that sounds like this, right? Like it sounds like, hey, Mike, saw you were looking for quality writers in your job description. That's your research, right? That's the context. The insight would be this usual or problem, right? Would be this usually means you are focused on quality over mass outreach. Issue is it's almost impossible to track and replicate what's working, right? Have you looked into email intelligence before? And then you can say, P.S., you know, it provides you real-time analytics on what's working across the team. But you notice, I never said my company name. I said kind of what we do. I alluded to it, right? My P.S. was more of that. But the entire email was a point of view. The entire email was, I did my research. Here's exactly what I think you have going on. Here's what I think your problem is. And here's maybe what you can look into to help solve that. And if it's not worth me, at least I gave you something that you can think about, right? Most sellers would write an email that looked something like this. It'd be like, hey, Mike, working with teams focused on quality over quantity with cold email, we've been able to 3x your reply rates by using AI to, which provides real-time coaching for reps and write, you know, as they write, gives your insights into everything that's working for them and how to coach to it, right? All this yada yada stuff. And then they'd end it with like, we're 30 minutes to chat. What you can see is like the first email, while it's not the most fun email for the seller to write because it has nothing to do with them, right? The second email, definitely more fun. You get to talk all about you. You can write that one really fast. It's like you basically tune out. I couldn't even like finish the flow of it because it just sounds unnatural for me at this point. But when you're creating your point of view, that's exactly what you need to do. You need to create your point of view by showcasing that you did your research from building your list, right? And using that formula.
Here you gave an example of that they're hiring a specific role. So what's your go-to list to do your research? Because you mentioned that to create your point of view, you are doing this when you're writing the email, but you mentioned a job description here. So are you looking for other things?
Yeah. So I always go surface level and then I go deep. So what I mean by that is by surface level, I'm going to look at, okay, here are the general things that I'm looking for when I reach out to a company. I pick out those things. And then I say, okay, they're hiring for SDRs and AEs. They just had a news event that they released. Let's just say they got $100 million in funding. And their tech stack is that they use Salesloft. I have to pick, based off of those three observations, which one do I want to focus on? Here's the thing. This is the mindset thing, right? Most sellers would say, out of those three things, how can I summarize that into one email? That's the wrong thing that you're focusing on the wrong thing, right? And I'll get into why that is, but what you need to do is pick one, go deep on that, write the problem, write that email about that problem. Interesting statistic from Sam Sales over at, you know, Sam McKenna, show me, you know me, all that good stuff. they just released 75% of sales reps don't follow up after the first email. 75%, right? Here's the thing. The average reply rate across the industry is 0 to 3%. So that's all the shot you're giving it. And you're telling me you're going to automate it. If I'm a top rep or I want to be a top rep, that tells me one, I need to follow up, and two, I need to write my own emails. All right. Like I can, it's very easy to stand apart from the crowd in a world. I always like to say this, in a world full of automation, it is very, very easy for you to be highlighted as being a human. If you look at your inbox and you ask your sales leaders to look at their inboxes or anybody to look at their inboxes that's in leadership, it's disgusting. It's like they get 10, 20 emails a day of people who are just mass sending them outreach. To tell you how bad it is, I am in 5 different cadences right now, this moment, right? I delete the email every morning. I mark it as spam, right? From people trying to sell me personalized AI email outreach. They literally didn't even look at my, like, I mean, I work at a personalized AI company. You know what I mean? Like helping people write better sales emails. Why would I purchase a personalized AI outreach? You know what I mean? Like it doesn't make sense. And so it's just like, that's how low the bar is. I always like to bring that up because sellers think that the bar is so high. They read all this content. They see these things on social media and they think that's what everyone's doing. It's not. No one's doing it. That's why the bar is so low. Right? Everyone's trying to find shortcuts and hacks and all these other things, but where you actually are going to get benefit is exactly what you tear into on this podcast, the process, the framework, the why behind everything that you do, because that's how you find success.
And you're right, because I think it's maybe 1% of the, I don't know, when I was working in Shipever, we were checking sometimes his inbox to see how many personalized email he was receiving. It was maybe 1% of them. The rest was all automation. So.
SalesLoft did a study across their entire customer base, and they found that 4 out of every 100 emails were personalized. 4.
Wow.
That's how low the bar is, right? Out of those 4 emails, they got 1,200% more replies than all the other emails that were not automated. In Lavender, when we typically ingest a team's data, you'd be surprised, you'd be shocked. I can't tell you how many teams they think automation's the key, and then they ingest their data and they get less than a 1% reply rate when their manual emails are getting like an 8 to 9% reply rate. It's like the answer is right in front of your face, but we're so consumed with this number. We're so consumed with reaching out to as many people as possible. It's like we think that everyone is waiting to buy our solution and that as soon as we reach out to them, they're just waiting for it. No one's waiting. And if they are, they're probably coming inbound. Right? Like they're probably coming inbound or you brought up a relevant pain and then they're now looking at it. But remember, not everybody is on the market for your solution. So why are you rushing to get in front of everybody? Because look, I'll tell you right now, one metric that a lot of sales teams are going to be starting to pay attention to over the last year, year and a half that nobody's thought about is the cost of burning all those leads. What's the cost behind sending 400,000 emails a month? Outside of you just getting locked on Google, I mean, how many domains have you ran? How many people have you just, they see your domain and they attribute that to spam now, right? It's a massive problem. And I think it's going to be something that a lot of people start to look into.
One, from the buying experience also, receiving a really, but the following the framework you shared, it makes the difference because I remember with a specific company, I sent one email and they booked. And then 2 months later, they bought, it was a Chili Pepper for this one specifically. But basically, it was the call outreach was just one email. And because it was really focusing on the problems they were facing and it worked. So because we were talking about what you are looking for, when you write your emails, let's talk about subject lines. What do you think about subject lines and what's your process?
Yeah, there's a big misconception about subject lines across the entire industry. And I see this all the time. The matter of the fact is your subject line is not meant to stand out. Your subject line, right? If you have like emojis in there, punctuation, all these other things, that just screams, this is a sales email. And if that person doesn't want to read it, they don't want to read it. There's 2 different ways to do this. And the data actually shows it. If you have a really long subject line in the sense of like, it's very specific, like say for instance, somebody saw that I was a Marine and they were also a Marine and you know, they ended up like literally deploying in the same place that I was deployed and they saw that. Like they put a subject line that said deployed together in 2017 Africa, right? I would be like, oh, okay. that caught my attention. I know that that was human, right? All this other stuff. Even if their sales email is like, it's an actual sales email and it's relevant. And they end with like, PS, can't believe we never ran into each other. I was part of this battalion or whatever. That would be like, okay, that got my attention. Like I at least opened it, right? That was a high example of a super personalized one. But that's very often rare when it comes to the case. I would say that's a 1%. The other 99% of the time, you should be writing 2 to 3 word subject lines, right? Quick in, quick out. It should go right under the surface, and it should not trigger what we call as the mental spam filter. So if you think about a mental spam filter, we were just talking about how automated outreach is and how buyers just delete things, right? Most emails are deleted within 3 seconds of being looked at. That means they're not opening it. They're just looking at the subject line and the preview text, and they're like, spam, spam, delete, 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 right? All these different things. Well, here's kind of what they're doing. They're triaging the inbox. And so what a buyer does is they're like, okay, here's an internal email. Here's a vendor email that I need to pay attention to. Here's a sales email. And then here's the emails that I actually need to work on because they're an internal one, right? And all those sales emails get deleted. Everything else makes it to the end of the inbox. You need to write an email that they can't mentally triage so quickly so that at the end of the day, it's still in their inbox. And then what happens is you're now a preview to your first line, which brings us into subject lines tied directly to your intro text. And so when you talk about intro text of an email, it's critical to not give it away that you were trying to sell them something and didn't do research, right? Lead with observations. Most emails will lead with like, hey, Mike, I hope this finds you well. Or, hey, Mike, happy Tuesday. Hey, Mike, I know you're not expecting this, but it's not a cold call, right? Like, it's a cold email. I can literally see it. It's like you just have to show up and say, hey, Mike, I saw this or saw you were working on this, you know, noticed you were having this, right? Like, lead with an observation. Give me a reason to want to open that email and see what you have to say.
And to follow up on what you're mentioning here, so because in your framework, you said you have your observation and then you start sharing, it was an insight or the challenge or the problem?
Yeah, so it's observation plus insight slash problem, right?
Okay, so how do you tie your observation to the insight and problems? So what's your process with it?
Yeah, I think everything tells a story. If you look at so I'll go all the way back to when I first got into sales. I got into sales out of the military and I had never wrote a sales email before. Jack Ryan, he's the guy who kind of just gave me a shot at you know, being in sales. He worked over at Lavender, at Saster for quite some time. And he was like, look, I think you'd do great at this. Let's just give it a shot. And I wrote the first email that I ever wrote and it was like a 64 in Lavender. It was the worst email I've ever seen. It's like 3 paragraphs. It was awful. And I deleted it all. And I was like, there's got to be a better way, right? How can I write a better email? And I thought about it. In reality, you're just telling a story. You're telling a story about what you saw, what that means, and where their better world could be. And so I think if you follow the plot line of a short story, it all just flows together and it ties your reader in and it makes them want to finish the email. A major majority of people who actually read the full email will reply to you, right? The problem is they don't read the full email. And so how you can tie things in is like, for your observation, we mentioned in that last one that I gave the example was like, hey, I saw you were hiring for, you know, quality writing. People, you know, saw you're hiring for salespeople who could quality write. Your next line should tie into why that matters, right? So that's your observation. So what's the insight from that? Typically, that means you are focused on this. So like, I know you aren't, like, it's not just the fact that you're hiring for quality writers, right? I did the beyond surface level research to look at the job description. But now I also know what your mindset is. That means you're probably focused on quality outreach over mass outreach. So now they understand I get them. I get their priorities a little bit. Then I tie that into what the problem is. So what now the next line has to lead to what is the problem with what I just said. So if you're focused on quality outreach, what's that problem? Well, if you think about it, if you and me are both on the same team and I have a 48% reply rate and you have a 38% reply rate, but we both email one-off emails, our boss would not be able to say, hey, this is what you need to do because it's working. there's no way for them to find out, right? They would have to go through every email, see the differences. It's going to be completely different because they're all one-off emails. Like, you need AI to be able to tell you and surface those insights. And so that's kind of what led me into, have you checked out email intelligence before? Because I know for a fact that if a sales leader is focused on quality outreach, they have no way of tracking that and helping coach that.
You said to talk about that earlier. Sometimes you can't find really specific things about your account. So what's your balance between creativity and following your framework?
It just depends on who I'm reaching out to. I think if I'm reaching out to a C-suite executive, I like to be a little bit more creative than if I'm reaching out to somebody who's like a decision maker. And what I mean by a decision maker is, like, typically, even if you booked a meeting with a CRO or a CMO, they're going to bring in their team because they hardly make decisions without their team, right? They need their team on board. And so I always call, like, the true decision makers, everybody's focused on getting to the C-suite. But what I'm focused on is gaining the love and, you know, appreciation from those, the core decision makers, which are really those directors and VPs. And so I think if I'm emailing to the C-suite, I'm going to be a little bit more creative and fun because they just read a lot of dry stuff all the time. Like, for instance, say you were emailing, somebody, CEO of, or let's call it Lars over at Snowflake, right? He spoke at Zaster last year. And I also spoke at Zaster. And so say I was going to email him, I might put a subject line of, hey, we, you know, met in the speaker room, right? Speaker room at Zaster, something like that. And then I would probably talk about how, you know, hey, I appreciated your talk. This is kind of what you were focused on. Here's kind of what I gave, right? And why I think our worlds could clash together. And, like, just try to get that initial interest in the sense of not trying to book a meeting, but I'm trying to see if there is some clash between our two worlds.
And so we are talking also about your framework, context, observation, insight, and then prime. Do you use other frameworks in your cold emails?
Yeah, I do. I think that's, like, the framework primarily that works the best when it comes to creating a point of view. But I think there's other stuff too, right? Like, when you're writing follow-ups, you don't really, it just depends, right? It just depends on what the context is, who the company is, how much information I have on them, all of those different things. Sometimes the best email is what we call the mousetrap, which is observation question, right? It'd be something like, saw you were hiring for quality email writers. Have you checked out email intelligence? Two lines, two sentences, super simple, right? That's a quick follow-up, nice and easy. But on follow-ups, we mentioned earlier that 75% of sellers don't follow up. You know what's embarrassing? The 25% of sellers who do follow up are doing it completely wrong. And why that is because when I mentioned before, I have three observations. Which one am I going to pick? Most sellers would say all of them, right? That's why they don't follow up. But when you are following up, most of those are, hey, Mike, did you get the chance to look at my last email? Did you see this? Or, hey, just want to bump this back up, right? Things like that. Like, no, I'm not going to go back and check it. If I didn't see the first one, you're just telling me I shouldn't pay attention to it. But what you should be doing is, I gave you three different things. What I say, it was TechSack that uses SalesLoft, hiring, and then I said funding or something like that as an example. So if I wrote my first email about the hiring portion, my second email would probably be about the tech stack. But you see, what I did was I wrote a really relevant and personalized email the first time, and then I followed up with another relevant and personalized email based off the research that I did. That stands out wavelengths above what everybody else is doing, because that shows not only did I do my research, I've continuously cared about them. I can't tell you how many people I've sent three or four emails to. They don't reply to me for like a month, month and a half. They'll literally see my emails later on and be like, hey, Mike, I've been meaning to get back to you. These were great. I shared them with my sales team. Can we please take a call? And with me, you have to understand, it's really hard. All right. I work in an AI email company. So my emails are pretty much our demo. If I write a bad email, they're not going to think the product works. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're under a lot of stipulations. So I always laugh when people are like, well, you work for an AI company, it must be easy. It's like, not really. Because if you write an email that somebody doesn't like, they pretty much wrote you off, you know?
And we're almost at the end of the episode. So I have two more questions for you. For an SDR or sales reps who is looking to improve their cold email results, what will be your top one practical tip?
Yeah, my number one tip would be create your point of view. Get off of templates and move to frameworks. Create a point of view. The number one problem with reps is they think that speed can't be achieved when they're personalizing. That's a lie. It's actually false. It's a false narrative that's been put out there. I do not have any templates. The only thing I use are frameworks. Lavender tracks my writing time. It takes me less than 4 minutes to write every email that I write, completely personalized with research, right? Thing is, the reason why I can do that is because I follow a framework. So when I'm using a framework, I get faster and faster and faster at filling that out in my head based off of one or two observations. And I'm getting smarter and smarter about the problems my industry is facing because I'm still going through the motions of getting research.
What do you consider as the most common mistake that sales reps make when it comes to cold emailing, and how can they avoid it?
Yeah, the most common mistake is like just pitching your product, right? The most common mistake, we kind of talked about it, right? But I won't even say like it's not having the point of view. The most common mistake is writing an email thinking that you need to inform your prospect. The last thing that your prospect wants is for you to go in and teach them about your solution. And I talk to people who sell technical stuff all the time, all day. And they're like, well, Mike, our solution's groundbreaking. It's technical. It's brand new. It's, you know, nobody understands it. And I'm like, if that was the case, you wouldn't be a company. You wouldn't have, you know, customers if nobody understood it, right? What you need to do is they understand the problem. You made your company off of a problem that people are having. So stop educating people about the solution you have and start educating them about the problem you solve for.
Yeah, for the mistake, I think also, like you mentioned, the point of view, but also the selection of the account, because like you mentioned earlier, you know that they don't know what you are selling, because if they are trying to sell you AI solution to write emails, they didn't do this research. And for me also, that's one of the major ones for sales reps. So Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. So before we end the episode, do you have anything else you want to share with the listeners?
No, I just think keep working hard. Don't give up. Remember, like I said, 25% of people are actually following up. So the bar is already really low. I think in this world where people always feel like they know everything, it's important to understand that nobody does. Like I said, I call myself a mediocre sales guy because I am. I think we're all mediocre at everything we do. And I think the day that you think that you're the expert in something is the day that you fail. And so keep learning, keep trying to move on and learn from others and never stop giving, because giving is what ultimately gives you the get.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time and for everyone listening. I see you on the next episode. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app. Then you go to the SDR Game page. And then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.